out of Memphis, Tennessee, of course, Gary Parrish with us here in Salt Lake City. Hey, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing really well. You guys okay?
Yeah, we're great. Is it snowing in Memphis?
You know what? It actually is snowing in Memphis. I mean, not at this moment, but it snowed overnight. And it doesn't take much. You just need a little bit of ice and a little bit of snow, and the schools are shut down. So my 12-year-old was not in school today, so he's a big fan of a half inch of snow that we got.
Do people lose their minds? I mean, you guys are in that ice belt, that Dallas to Memphis to Nashville to Atlanta. You guys get ice storms. Do people lose their minds when it snows there, or is it, you know, okay?
No, you would make – I think the way it typically works, like the chain of it all, is – people on the East Coast make fun of those of us in the South, and then you guys make fun of the East Coast, right?
Right.
But here's the issue that I try to explain to people sometimes, is that it's not that an inch of snow or some ice is a big deal, and it's that we don't have the equipment to do anything about it. In other words, if we get ice on the roads, it just stays there until it melts, whereas you guys are equipped to remove it, and in the East Coast, they're equipped to remove it. And, you know, because of where, you know, in rural Tennessee, rural Mississippi, a lot of the roads are, you know, they're country roads. And so you don't get a lot of cars on them. And so from a public school perspective, they just don't risk it. Like, you don't want a bus full of children on a country road that slides off into a ditch. And so they cancel school at the mere hint of ice. And I know it sounds silly to people in other parts of the country, but simply put, you know, we don't have, you know, somebody said this earlier today. I thought it was pretty good. We have lots of salt shakers. We don't have any salt trucks. So when we get snow and ice, we just kind of got it until it goes away.
But nothing better when you're a kid than a snow day. So I won't begrudge the South or the East Coast or anybody, because those kids are having a blast on the snow days. And that's always great. I don't know if you heard Bill in the preamble, but we want to know what the outsider, so to speak, perspective is on this Pac-12 basketball conference, because it's very difficult to get a gauge on who's really the best team at this point.
Yeah, you know what? Here's what I would say first, is that nobody's great, right? You look at the ACC, and I think North Carolina, again, all relative to this season. Like, I don't think North Carolina is one of the all-time great teams this year, but I think North Carolina is great relative to the other teams this year. You know, you look at the Big Ten, I think Iowa's really good relative to the rest of the nation right now. I think Maryland can be really good. You know, we could go through all the leagues. But in the Pac-12, I don't know that anybody's really, really good. But I think Arizona's good, and I think Oregon's good, and I think USC's good. And Utah's not really that far off. You know, they've got, you know, a couple top 50 wins. They've only got one loss outside of the top 50. I'm going by the KenPom computer ratings. And so, you know, honestly, this morning, you know, I rank basketball teams every morning in the spirit of getting as many cheap page views as possible. And you get to a point where you go, okay, Arizona, USC, Oregon, how do you figure out who goes where and in what order? Because USC's beaten Arizona, you know, Oregon's beaten USC. They've all got some questionable losses, but they've all got some decent wins. And the truth is, like, you could reasonably put Oregon, USC, and Arizona in any order and have them all bunched together, like, somewhere in the 20s, and it would make perfect sense. So it's going to be a fun race to follow, but trying to make sense of it isn't really a simple thing to do at this point in the season.
I think the Pac-12, Gary, and I do play-by-play for Utah, so I just got back from seeing Wazoo last night. I think the Pac-12 is going to have 6 to maybe 7 teams in the tournament, but they'll be seeded anywhere from about 4 to 9. Does that sound about right to
you? Yeah, like, that makes sense to me. And, like, it reminds me of, God, I can't, maybe it was the Big 12 a few years ago. There was a league that fit your description almost identically. In other words, they had a bunch of teams in, but none of them were great. And so they were all gone by the second weekend. Like, they got like 6 teams in, but they all got eliminated in either the round of 64 or the round of 32. And I think that's not unlike what could happen to the Pac-12. You know, in fairness, you know, let me always say, it's a single elimination tournament at, you know, 40-minute basketball games. It's not true that anything can happen, but lots of things can happen. Teams that aren't, you know, even the top 30 teams in the country can end up in the Elite Eight, so whatever. But I think you could get 6, maybe even 7 Pac-12 schools in the tournament, But none of them be really top 16 teams in the country. And so and those types of leagues are the ones that, that make it difficult to try to make sense of because, you know, at the top of the ACC, you kind of got a sense at this point North Carolina is going to beat most people. I think Virginia, even though they've taken some questionable losses, is going to beat most people. I think Louisville is going to beat most people. Again, I kind of know who's going to beat most people. In the Pac-12, I really think the top five or six, like they're just going to beat up on each other, and a lot of it's going to be contingent on a week-to-week basis, who's playing the home games and who's playing the road games.
Coming into the season, we talked quite a bit about Jakob Poeltl and what his role was going to be for this Utah basketball team, and I was curious how he was going to stack up with some of the elite players in the country. Now that we have the sample size we do, how does he stack up with some of the elite big men? We know that he's a draft prospect, but is he the best one out there? Is he the best one in the West?
It's hard to say, like, define, like, by college player or NBA prospect. Like, trust me, there are still some NBA scouts who would take Sal LeBissiere in the top five of the NBA draft, even though he's been a mostly irrelevant basketball player at Kentucky this season. Jakob at least produces at the collegiate level at a pretty high level, and I don't think he's done anything, nothing, to hurt his draft stock by returning to school. That's always the fear when guys like him come back to school. Jakob Poeltl, Chris Dunn, guys who would have been drafted in the first round last season but decided for whatever reason that they weren't ready to go. I hope it doesn't become a financial mistake. And for those two guys, at least, it's not a financial mistake. So I don't know if he's the best big in the country, but he is, because at the collegiate level, like Rico Gathers at Baylor is really, really tough. You know, what do you call Perry Ellis? Is he a front court player? He's great at Kansas. But he's certainly on the short list. And in terms of combining, you know, the people who check both boxes, like somebody who's a high-level college player and a high-level NBA draft prospect, because those two things are different things often. Like Jamal Murray is a great NBA prospect. I don't know that he's a great college player at Kentucky. So when you start talking about guys who are great NBA prospects and great college players, I think Jakob undeniably is either at the top of that list or really, really close to it.
Gary Parrish is our guest. He's the national columnist and writer for CBS Sports. You also see him doing some TV. They let Gary sneak into New York, do a little TV from time to time as well. He's based out of Memphis, Tennessee. It's the fifth year of Larry Krzyzkowiak, and I was talking to him about this the other day. It's still amazing to think that, you know, four seasons ago, they were maybe the worst Power 5 team in all of college basketball. They won six games, so I think he's done a pretty good job of resurrecting the program. Is Utah registering again nationally, Gary, as the way they did maybe when Majerus was here?
You know what? Yes, in a big picture sense. I think everybody understands that Utah basketball is back and that Larry's going to be able to keep that thing. There's no reason to think he's not going to be able to keep this thing going. I guess I'll put it that way. You never know, but all you can ever hope at a school, whether we're talking men's basketball or football, the two most prominent sports at the collegiate level, is like get the right guy and then give him what he needs to be successful. And you'd be a little closer to whether or not the administration is supporting him in the way that you have to be to operate at the high level, highest level. But undeniably, in my mind, they've got the right guy. Like they found the most important piece to being a relevant college basketball program is having the right head coach. And there are a whole bunch of programs in the country right now who just do not have the right head coach to flourish. Utah has the right head coach. And so I guess I would say everybody understands that Utah basketball is a thing again. The issue, to the extent that it's an issue, is that when you don't have a number beside your name, you start to disappear a little bit from the radar on a national level. People love to explain on social media every Monday how, quote, the polls don't matter. The polls don't mean anything. And I get it from the sense that they do not decide championships. They do not give out trophies for where you were ranked in January in the coaches poll. But they do matter, and they matter in this sense. When I go to my iPhone and click on the CBS Sports app or the ESPN app, and I click on college basketball scores, the scoreboard that pops up, it features teams that are ranked in the top 25. So people are aware of what you're doing. You know, we, you know, inside college basketball shows on CBS Sports Network, we show a lot of highlights, but mostly, you know, if you want to guarantee your highlights are going to be a part of the package, you got to have a number beside your name. And so in that sense, the rankings are hugely important. And I say all that to say at this moment, Utah doesn't have a national ranking next to its name. So did people in Philadelphia understand that they won at Washington State last night? Like, I don't know. My guess is probably most people who didn't follow it closely didn't see that at all. But they're not that far away from being ranked again. Like, in this particular year, you're just always, when you're a team like Utah, a couple wins away from getting back in, a couple losses from somebody else falling out. So I guess that's a long-winded way to say, without the number, people don't see the day-to-day details, but do people understand that Utah basketball is in good shape and probably going to be in the NCAA tournament and a factor again? Yes, everybody understands that.
Gary Parrish, CBS Sports College Basketball Insider, is our guest here for a couple more minutes on ESPN 700. I saw you tweeting about it. It's not college basketball, but obviously what's going on in the NBA with David Blatt and LeBron James, his involvement or lack thereof with this coaching decision that was made, despite the fact that the Cavaliers are top in the Eastern Conference. How surprised were you when you saw this news come down today?
Surprised in the sense that, it came on a Friday afternoon after a 13-point win. Like, you don't really expect coaches to get fired the day after they win a double-digit game, right? So surprised in that sense, but not surprised that it ended this way. And I'll be honest with you, I don't have a real problem with it. I understand that he went to the NBA Finals last year and had him in first place in the Eastern Conference this year. And on a very surface level, people are going to look at that and go, wow, that guy lost his job? But, what if you just think that anybody could do that with a LeBron James, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving roster? What if you think anybody could win at this level with the pieces he has in place? What if you think that somebody else could actually do more? And more most important, what if LeBron James doesn't respect the coach, which means LeBron's teammates do not respect the coach? Then you've got an ineffective coach, and so it is time to make a change. And you can wait till you lose in the finals again, or you can try to do something now to get that roster the type of assistance it needs to maybe get through a little bit. Now, I think LeBron's lack of championships in Cleveland, assuming that he doesn't get them, is going to have more to do with the Golden State Warriors becoming something nobody ever anticipated. And by something, I mean one of the great teams in the history of professional basketball, and or the Spurs completely reloading and Kawhi Leonard becoming one of the best players in the world. But still, you only get so many years of LeBron James in his prime, and you got to try to maximize it. And I guess I would say this. Once upon a time, there was a guy named Mark Jackson who won 50-plus games in Golden State. And people said, whoa, like, how's he lose his job? Well, what we found out is that basically anybody could win 50-something games with Golden State. And at least the two guys who have had the job after Mark Jackson have done way more. One won a championship, having never coached a game before in his life. Then he had to have back surgery. Another guy steps in, never coached a game in his life, started a season like 24-0. So what we might find out is that people who were critical of the Warriors back then had it all backwards. Yeah, you fire a coach who can only win 55 with Golden State, because damn near anybody else can win 65 with Golden State and championships with Golden State. And I think this is rooted in the same stuff. I'm not predicting that it's going to work out the right way, but if you don't believe David Blatt's maximizing thing, then I don't have a problem with you making that change, even if he happens to be in first place in the Eastern Conference standings.
But, Gary, why do the Cleveland Cavaliers try to sell us on the fact that LeBron was not consulted on the decision?
I have no idea.
I mean, nobody believes that.
Well, that's the thing. Okay, one, it's untrue. We all know it's untrue. So, like, what? And B, nobody's going to believe it anyway. Like, I can sort of get down with telling a lie if it's convenient, if people will actually believe it. But what's the point in telling a lie nobody's ever going to believe? And that's what they did today by, floating the report through Brian Windhorst at ESPN. And let me be clear, Brian's one of my friends. He's great at his job. I don't think there's any way I would have went public with that report, because you just get mocked for it. We can play a game of semantics if you want to and say, well, we didn't call LeBron in and ask him, but that move doesn't go down under any scenario. That move does not go down without LeBron James signing off on it. I'm not sure they sign a 13th guy to their bench without LeBron James signing off on it. So they sure aren't going to remove the head coach in the middle of January without LeBron okaying it. And so I don't have any idea why the Cavs peddled that story, because, as you put it accurately, the story is simply unbelievable.
Is there anybody more fun to watch in college basketball today than Buddy Hield?
I don't think so. I mean, he's just a terrific shot maker and a big-time player. And I think the leader of a team that still, even despite the loss to Iowa State the other night, should be ranked number one in the country. I mean, I understand that college basketball rankings are subjective and you can do them a lot of different ways. But if you are looking for the best resume in the country, even with the loss to Iowa State the other night, Oklahoma still has the best resume in the country. And it's such a great story, too, because this isn't a kid who, like, you know, was a top 10 recruit, McDonald's All-American. You know, he was a borderline top 100 recruit, just a guy. And he has become not only a great college player, but NBA scouts are in love with him, too. You know, he's got decent size for his position, can handle it well enough to be a combo guard, shoots it like crazy, and there are absolutely, to my understanding, no red flags whatsoever. The kid works like a maniac. Like, the type of stuff you hope to try to talk young people into talking, you know, into. Work hard, be a great teammate, be a great leader, find your shortcomings and turn them into positive. All these things that it frustrates you to no end when young people don't respond to it. Like, he does all that on his own. He's just wired that way. You know, you hear cliches about he's the first guy to get to the gym and the last guy to leave. It's actually true with him. And so it's been a fun story to watch him develop into this, because he's not just a great player, like you put it, an entertaining player. And by all accounts, I don't pretend to know him well, but by all accounts, like, I've never heard anybody, his coaches, other people's coaches, say a bad word about him. Like, people really, really like Buddy Hield.
Yeah, and just to throw a little salt in a Utah wound, he was committed or softly verbaled to Utah and then switched his commitment to Oklahoma. Oh, what could have been?
So I guess Utah fans might have something to say about it. But outside of that, nobody else.
Well, at least he didn't commit to BYU or UCLA or somebody like that. That's for sure. Gary,
are you guys gonna get that straight, by the way, and get them playing again or what?
That's not my decision. That's well above my pay grade. But as you can imagine, it made for good radio for a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's what I always tell people, right? Like you guys mentioned, I live in Memphis and I host a radio show here, and there were all sorts of anonymous reports a few weeks back about, you know, Dave Yeager, the head coach, might be in trouble, and you know, this guy's a sort of pulling the strings in the front office. And people would ask me all the time, what do you think about that? I was like, I think it's great for 2 hours of radio every single day. So now I completely understand where you're coming from.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
Take care, guys. Bye.
Gary Parrish, CBS Sports, national college basketball writer.